News Talk 760 WJR.
I welcome you back here on the Mitch Albom program. As I mentioned at the start of the show, today is the release of a new Tuesdays with Maury edition, the 20th anniversary edition of the book, in which I wrote a new chapter looking back on everything that's happened over the course of the last 20 years. It's been a pretty remarkable 20 years. It was a very innocent connection. I happened to be watching television one night, flipped on the Nightline program, saw Ted Koppel talking about Maury Schwartz, an old professor of mine who was dying from ALS.
How did he ever know that he knew that Ted Koppel got with that whole story in the first place?
Well, it's a good question because, you know, how would Ted Koppel find him? He didn't know him. Maury had started, you know, when he got his diagnosis that he was going to die from Lou Gehrig's disease, you know, at first he went through all the agony, and then he basically said, well, am I going to just be useless for the rest of my life, or am I going to do something with the time I have left? And he decided he would teach. And so he started to do these, like, impromptu classes about what it was like to die. And people would come by and spend an afternoon or spend a couple of hours, and he would tell them everything that he was going through as he was losing the ability to walk and to move his arms and to brush his teeth and to wipe his own rear end. And eventually a Boston Globe reporter came out and wrote a story about this strange old guy who was teaching the last class of his life and what it meant to die. That story was printed in the Boston Globe. Ted Koppel saw the story. He flew up to Boston, did what would end up being the first of three episodes on Nightline. I don't think they ever did three on anything except the Iran hostage crisis.
Right.
In cut 18 here, this was the opening sentence of how he got into his interview with Maury.
Give me time because they're not labeled on my. That's 18 you want?
Ted Koppel 1995. Yeah, this is from 1995 when the original show aired. The book came out in 1997.
Television anchors who normally enjoy a broad, if shallow, fame tend to diminish in importance in direct proportion to where you're going. Maury is going to die.
Then he did the show. I saw it. I felt very guilty. I called him up, and he kind of guilted me into coming to see him since it had been 16 years. I had such an incredible afternoon when I first saw him and was so taken by how upbeat he seemed to be, even though he had lost so much already of his ability to use his body, and he knew he was going to die in a matter of months, and yet, you know, he didn't want to talk about anything like that. He always wanted to share these different lessons with me. And I ended up, I was at a point in my life where I had done an awful lot career-wise, but I don't know if I had done a whole lot humanity-wise. And maybe something just clicked inside of me, and I began to go back. And I went back again and again and again. I ended up going every Tuesday. And we ended up sort of doing this last class together on what's important in life. It wasn't supposed to be a book. It was just supposed to be a series of visits. The book came later when I found out he was in debt for his medical bills. Maury was an incredible person to sit next to because he was kind of like an elf, a Christmas elf. You know, he always had a twinkle in his eye, and he always told a great story. And cut six here from the Maury tapes. This was a favorite little story he told about how everybody sort of fits in to life. And this was what it was like to sort of sit alongside him. You'd get these little anecdotes, these little funny stories, and then he'd try to teach you a lesson from it.
There's this little wave, this he wave, who's bobbing up and down, I shortened it, bobbing up and down on the ocean, having a great time, and all of a sudden he recognizes he's going to crash into the shore and get annihilated. He gets so despairing. My God, what's going to happen to me? Along comes a female wave, bobbing up and down, having a great time. The female wave says to the male wave, why are you so depressed? The male says, you don't understand. You're going to crash into that shore, and you'll be nothing. She says, you don't understand. You're not a wave. You're part of the ocean. That's what I believe.
Yeah, that's what it was like. And then you had to write it down. And then he'd say, like, did you get it? Did you understand what it? Yeah, yeah, I got it. I think I understand what it is.
Was that
and
the first? Was that early? Is that later? Like when you
that
first
was pretty visit, early.
What was the first thing that you got?
I'm not sure that I have the tapes of the very first thing that I got. But I do know that I talked to him about being young versus being old. And I asked him, and this is cut two here, about the myth of youth. Because I said to him one time, aren't you envious of young people? You know, young people can run around and can go do things. You're going to die. And he was very wise about that. Listen to this.
Mitch, it's very simple. As you get older, you grow and you learn more. If you stayed at 22, you'd be as ignorant as you were at 22. Well, I find that the process of aging is highly correlated with the process of learning, internal growth. So it's not only a negative, that is, you're going to die as you get older, but it has a lot of positives.
And then the cut that follows, he talks about envy.
You know what that reflects? Dissatisfied lives. Unfulfilled lives. Lives that haven't found meaning. Because if you found meaning in your life, you don't want to go back. You want to go forward. But if you didn't find any meaning, you're still looking for it. If you're looking to the past for your satisfactions, it means your present isn't very satisfying.
As I say, being able to sit there and sort of write this stuff down or tape it as we did. And we used to, it was funny because I always used to put this little microphone, I learned from, you know, radio, putting these little tab microphones on his collar, because obviously you're not going to hold a microphone up to Maury's mouth. You're talking for hours and hours. And every time I would lean in, he'd wear these pajama tops, you know, really soft, so the collars were really floppy. And every time I put the mic on, after about 5 minutes, it would flop over somewhere, and I'd have to fix it. And, of course, to fix it, I'd have to lean in real close to fix his microphone, and it was always like kissing him. And he'd get this big smile on his face. And I'd say, I think you just wear these floppy clothes so that I have to kiss you basically every 5 minutes. He said, maybe, you know, like that, maybe. He also talked about being remembered, you know, which is something that you start to think about when you die. And I wrote about this in the new afterword that, you know, I think deep down Maury was a little afraid of maybe being forgotten. But he had a pretty philosophical view of it. And, you know, if you on the cuts about being remembered in cut one, you see that he sort of has a philosophy about no matter how much you do, no matter how famous you are, or no matter how rich you are, how, you know, how many movies you make while you're here, in time, it all fades. And he had a pretty good philosophy about that.
It never even occurred to me. We're all forgotten. 100 years from now, unlikely anybody will remember me.
Do you think that that's a fear that people have?
Oh, yeah. That they will be forgotten as if they never existed.
Right.
That's hard to accept.
And so in cut four of that same series, how do you combat that fear of being forgotten in your everyday life? And this was his answer.
Live as fully and deeply as you can in the moment, which doesn't mean you ignore the future or the past. Mm-hmm. But all you have is right now. Right. So whatever you do is right now.
I hear me in the background.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
right. Let me get this down. Hold on. Slower. All right, let's take. Yeah, go ahead, Rosie.
It's funny also, Kenny said you didn't have like the first, you know, session of taped. You were basically going to go there. It was going to be one and done. Why would you record meeting Maury for that very first Tuesday?
I didn't.
Right.
Yeah, I don't have that. That I just have my mental notes and notes that I took on the way back home. But
you
I
never
don't
thought
have that
you'd go back week after week after week.
No, I don't think I brought a tape recorder until maybe the fourth time. The rest of it was just visits and, you know, but I do remember, well, I'll tell you how I first met him because it was kind of funny when I got there out of the car, but let me do the traffic here first. Here's Kevin O'Neill.
Thanks, Mitch. I really love your story about when you went to visit his gravesite. That's a wonderful story. You got to relate that one. That's so good.
I'm back here on 760 WJR talking about the Tuesdays with Maury experience, as today is the day that they released the 20th anniversary of Tuesdays with Maury special edition book that I wrote a new chapter for at the end.
Is that the last chapter?
The last chapter after it all ends. And I do talk about going to visit Maury's grave, which was where the book sort of ended in its original form. And I'll share that story in a second because Kevin wants to hear it. But I just want to share one or two more things about that I thought made Maury so really incredible to be alongside and to learn from while he was there. You know, he lost so much of his physical being. That's what ALS does. And he had to become dependent on so many other people. I'm going to call an audible here, Ray, but this cut about asking about his having to have his behind wiped from a conversation that we had. This was sort of, I remember he said to me, I said, when did you know that, you know, you really were sick or dying? And he said, when I had to ask somebody to wipe my ass. You know, that's the way he said it. And he said, I hope you don't mind my saying ass. And I said, no, I think I've heard it before. But you think about that, you're 78 years old, and now all of a sudden you're an infant again. And he spoke to me about that moment.
Hold on, where cut are we at?
The dependency I enjoy is when they turn me over on my side, put cream on my behind,
right,
so I don't get sores.
Right.
Or when they wipe my brow, you know, or massage my legs.
Right.
Little things to make me more comfortable. Size my back and feed me. Even the feeding can be enjoyable.
I also asked him about what was the most important things in life, how to sort of live a regular life, and what is essential in cut one here that we have. And, you know, that was kind of the essence of what the book was about. My whole experience was I was 37 and healthy. He was 78 and dying, and yet he seemed 10 times happier than I was. What was sort of the secret to that? And here is part of what he shared with me.
We all walk around as if we're sleepwalking. We really don't experience the world fully because we're half asleep doing the things automatically that we are supposed to do.
And in the following cut, in cut two, he continued on that.
Live in the moment. We are so futuristically oriented, planning for the future, thinking about the future, wondering about the future, trying to predict the future, and on this way.
As you know, they ended up making a movie out of the book, which was really a delightful process because Jack Lemmon got to play it. And he played Maury. And as it turned out, and all the serendipity that kind of came with Tuesdays with Maury, Jack Lemmon himself was dying when he made the movie. He didn't tell anybody, but he had gotten the prognosis of cancer. And it turned out to be his last major role. And we had him on our program after he filmed it in cut two here. And he talked about what was the uniqueness of playing this role.
Well, physically, I was different because I was lighter. I went on a high-protein diet in the beginning of it, and I ended up losing about 15 pounds altogether. But mainly, it was, I think, mentally and emotionally. He really got to me. I found at times that, and may if I may compliment you for a minute, it is a beautifully written, it's a gorgeous story.
Thank you.
And beautifully done. And the adaptation, I think, is very faithful. There was times towards the end when I could look at a page once or twice and bang, it was there.
Here is a clip of him from that movie and clip two from the film when I think this is at the end of the first time I came to visit him and didn't know if I should ask if I could come back again.
Davey, you still don't know how to say goodbye, do you? Still. Come here, I'll show you. Mitch, I'm going to get to you one of these days, boy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Would you forget something?
When can I come back?
Office hours are Tuesdays. We're Tuesday people, Mitch.
That's virtually word for word.
Really?
Especially the yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. And he said, I'm going to make you cry one day. I said, yeah, 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 yeah. And I think, of course, it ended up happening at the very end. Oprah Winfrey was the person who made that film. And actually, I didn't know this until she came on our program in this cut, too. I didn't know that she was sort of being pressured to make it into a movie and not a TV film. But she told us this.
And I even had Michael Eisner himself call me and ask, would I be willing to put it on the big screen? I had to hold my ground there because I have always felt that it was a little book with a grand, grand heart. And that for me, although we all could have made more money doing it on the big screen, that for me, the idea was to get many more people to see it and perhaps get their hearts to stretch a little wider.
By the way, when Jack Lemmon, when I called him, he got nominated for the Emmy Award. And I called him to congratulate him. I made a joke with him, and I said, now don't forget the writer when you win, because you're going to win. And you'll get up there, and you'll be all excited, and they always forget the writer. They thank their wife's brother's dog trainer, but they don't remember the writer. And he laughed. He said, oh, no, I won't. He said, I don't know if I'm going to win. I said, you're going to win. Don't forget the writer. So sure enough, he wins the Emmy Award, and here's what he said.
First of all, I thank Oprah for the part of a lifetime, and I promised Mitch Albom on the phone that if I were lucky enough to receive this, that I'd thank him for laying the bricks with that magnificent story that he wrote. And I do. He laid the bricks. It's all him. Thank you all. God bless. Thank you, Maury.
That's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
I gotta say, it's pretty cool. Mm. All right, so the story that Kevin, I think, is the one that you asked me, it happened the last time I went to go see Maury, and he was very weak, and he always wanted people in the morning to carry him out from his bed into his office and put him in his chair, even though he couldn't move or couldn't do anything, because he always said, if you're in bed, you're dead. That was his philosophy, and so he hated that. And the last day I went to go see him, I went into his office, and he wasn't there. And I didn't know what had happened. And I walked back a couple steps to his bedroom, and he was in his bed. And so I knew that that was the end. And I went over to him. I sat down, and I held his hand. And he could still talk, thank God, because a lot of ALS patients lose the ability to speak. But he still had a voice, and he said, Mitch, I want to ask you a favor. And I said, sure, you know, anything. And he said, after I'm dead, I want you to come to my grave and visit me. And I said, well, all right, you know, I was going to do that anyhow. Not the way everybody else comes. Don't drive your car, get out, leave the engine running, put some flowers down, say a couple words, get back in your car, drive away. Come when you have some time. Bring a blanket. Bring some sandwiches and talk to me about the world. Tell me who's in the World Series. Tell me what's going on. And I'm looking at him and say, okay, hang on. You want me to come to a cemetery, have a picnic at your tombstone, and talk to the air? And he said, exactly. Just like we're talking now. And I said, well, Maury, you know, let's face it, it's not going to be like we're talking now because you're not going to be able to talk back. And he looked at me as if I were being very naive, and he said, well, Mitch, I'll make you a deal. After I die, you talk, I'll listen, you know. And that was pretty much the last thing he said to me. And, of course, that was the essence of everything that went on between the two of us. And I still talk to him, and I do go to his grave, and I go every time I'm in Boston, and it's a very nice place, and I sit there, and I don't bring a sandwich because I think they would arrest me. Yeah. Hey, there's this homeless guy.
Yeah. Well,
he's
dressed.
By Maury Schwartz's grave. Let's go. Another one. But it was a very, very sweet ending to that story. And I write about the times I go to visit him in his grave and how much I've learned over the last 20 years since that book came out. I hope to be a better person than I was back then. That's not hard. I wasn't very good back then. But to care about other people and the stuff that I'm going through with little Chica here now and all is kind of ironic that it's 20 years later, because it's like the same thing in reverse. Instead of sitting with an old man and learning lessons, I sit with a little girl who's, you know, dying and learn lessons from her. But it's been an incredible experience, and I was happy to write that new chapter, and I'm glad to be able to tell the story here, even though I didn't go on CBS like I was supposed to this morning because I wanted to stay home with our little girl. Here was the end of Tuesdays with Maury, both the movie and the book. They used the same words. that I wrote, so it's appropriate to end the segment this way.
Have you ever had a special teacher? One who taught you things you may not understand, but who never gives up? Who knows the really tough lessons take a lifetime to learn? The last class of my old professor's life took place once a week on Tuesdays. The subject was the meaning of life. The teaching goes on.